Welcome to episode one, B2B, the Business Club podcast, where B2B meets B Recruitment and the director, Stuart Biggs.
Yeah, so I've known him for about 15, 20 years, and it's just an informal chat, really, as to how he's bossing recruitment, any hints and tips that he might have, and just his journey, really. So, should be good.
Enjoy. Welcome to the inaugural B2B Business Club podcast. Thanks for being our guest today, Stuart. Would you like to introduce yourself, a little bit about yourself?
What would you like to be called Stuart? Anyway, sure.
No, yeah. Stuart. But definitely not. I'm honoured to Bagnall Brothers. The Bagnall Brothers. So, yes. So, Stu Biggs. Family man. Son. Girlfriend. Keen amateur footballer. Kev might disagree with me on that.
You tried.
Picking up cricket into my early 40s now to give me something to do for the next 10 years. Keep me busy. Go to the gym. All the standard stuff, really. And obviously, while we're here to talk today, B Recruitment set it up in 2018. And touch wood, never looked back since.
So, yeah, B Recruitment, we'll come round to that in and of itself. But to begin with, if we take it back to the start, always interested to speak to business owners about where they began, how they got into the business that they're in. So obviously with yourself, you've been in recruitment for 20 years. Yeah. So how did that start? How did you fall into it? Was it a deliberate move, or did you fall into it like most people do at a young age?
Yeah, a lot of people do. A lot of people that I've sort of shared my career with and people that have been involved in my journey and me involved in theirs literally fell into it. But I suppose I started, I was a lifeguard and I worked in a leisure centre in my teens. Realised I wasn't going to be any good at football, so I wanted to stay in sport. So I did sort of leisure and tourism at school and at college and stuff, which was great fun. But quite quickly realised that there wasn't really a lot of money in that, you know, sort of that sort of leisure side. Did a bit of retail, realising then need to go.
Did you ever see that video of him with Morrison?
Yeah, there you go. Testament to my retail.
So he was selling beds on it, and Morrison came in with his mum's, but yeah, you could probably tell the story better, but yeah. He pops up. What did it pop up on? Soccer AM.
But it still pops up on Sky Sports every now and then now, because obviously
Clinton Morrison.
I asked him when...
He's on Sky Sports.
Yeah, I asked him when he'd done that Q&A with the rider. I was like, do you remember? Remember I sent messages?
Yeah, not me, yeah.
That fit in though, the room, was it?
No. It's like 21.
Yeah.
Immature.
You only sweep in it and you know.
This is very much worse than all the other stores, so it should work here as well.
It was literally at his pump then with us. Mm. Playing for Republic of Ireland, just signed for us, just scored against the Villa, I think. It was literally down this end at the, you know, when we beat us 3-1, the ankle and down here. Mm. Good old days, but probably 3 stone like that.
More fresh face, you were.
Yeah, bloody hell. I was about 21 then.
Yeah.
So I did a bit of retail. I did that for about 18 months, sold a few beds and a bit of furniture and stuff, and realised that I was half decent at talking to people. Probably like a lot of people in recruitment who came into it, with due respect, you know, not necessarily from a particularly well-educated background. I wasn't the naughty kid at school by any stretch, but it was always could do better, you know, gets distracted easy. I just wanted to play football with my mates and go to PE lessons. That's literally all I wanted to do at school. So I had to find something that used my personality. So I got to about 2004 and one of my mates was working at the Best Connection. He'd been there a year, he was telling me about how they manage you and appraise you and all this sort of stuff. And yeah, the early days was just like getting there, you know, 30 odd sales calls a day. There's the yellow pages type thing. You know, make us something out of that, mate. And if you don't,
Waking cold sweats about it.
If you don't, you know, there's the door type thing. And I'm sure we're going to get into it, but it was a bit of a different world then. Bit of a different world. So, but that's where I learned my trade, I suppose, and met some great people all the way. I'm sure I'll reference a few of them as we go through. But yeah, brilliant days. Brilliant days.
I think as well with that as being Best Connection, and don't want to blow smoke on the backside too much, but they taught us best practice, didn't they?
Mm.
Obviously that's where we met.
Yeah.
As a reference to that at the moment, which we'll go into. But they taught us it best practice, and they were like, okay, although these are 30 sales calls a day or whatever, this is how you deal with negatives. They sent you on training courses, yeah. Didn't they? They might have turned you into a salesperson for them.
They were, they had every answer to every question back in the day, you know, the sales cycle, the courses that you used to go on. You know, I'm sure they're still doing that now. Recruitment's changed, but still, I'm sure still a great company. But it was a bit of a who's who. Anybody who's gone on to do anything half decent with their career generally had a ground in there.
That's what they
And yeah, there's still a lot of good people working there, and there's a lot of good people that have left and gone on to do good things. But yeah, it was just, it was learning the basics and doing them really, they were good. Learning the basics and doing really, really well. So that were good. They were good at teaching you that, you know. So just in recruitment, it's about, and that's what we do well. I'm sure we'll come on to it, but it's, you know, your check-ins, your follow-up, you know, asking the right questions with your temp, asking what else you can be doing for your clients, building relationships, you know, not getting put off by one or two bad calls, coming back from having a bit of a bad time with your clients and turning things around, because things are going to happen. And things do happen, and things have probably happened this morning since I've been here talking to you boys. You know,
it's a very dynamic industry, isn't it?
You have to just roll your sleeves up and think, okay, what can I do now? What can I do now? It's consistently thinking about those things. But yeah, God, it was there's some great stories from back in them days. Great, great stories. Me and Kev worked together for a little bit.
Yeah.
And
not seconded, by the way.
Yeah.
So to start the driving desk.
Yeah, you were doing
some time. That's obviously in Birmingham, yeah.
You know, Tamworth, because obviously there was a little bit of driving around there.
Mm.
And I was just sort of probably 2 years in at that point and just doing what I could, really. Try to convert on business and do what they wanted you to do.
Well, I'm earning someone else the big bucks and...
Yeah, and I was comfortable living a good lifestyle.
Yeah. I think that's the problem sometimes with not going and doing what you want to do to a certain extent, because you're bound by the constraints of what you earn and the bills stay the same each month. And it's typically a gamble, isn't it? If you go out on your own and...
It can be very insulated, can't you? You find when people, especially work for an organisation for an amount of time, that becomes the universe of your capabilities and your ambitions. A lot of people want to say, I mean, whether it's for being pushed out, whether it's a redundancy or making the jump voluntarily. The world is a much bigger place than it can seem in perspective when you are somewhere where a lot of employers will kind of help push that agenda as well. They'll make people think this is as much as you can get, as far as you can go, because they don't want to lose someone with ability and talent
to the business.
Yeah. Massively. I mean, the phrase golden handshake, innit? So, you know, you've got guys that are better than me at recruitment, outstanding recruiters. You know, I like to think I'm all right at what I do. There's better recruiters out there than me that are, you know, that they've got a bit of a golden handshake at some of the bigger companies, and they're probably they're sort of in their early mid 40s, late 30s, late 40s, sort of in middle ages. Like, I don't like to admit it, but yeah, you know, in the middle ages,
all them old guys, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, but better recruiters than me, hands down. I don't mind admitting that. But they haven't taken that gamble, and they're doing some amazing things for their businesses. But yeah, I suppose I got to a position really where I'd manufactured myself into a bit of a corner, and I thought it's the only real way forward for me now.
Mm.
So yeah,
and the rest is
The rest is history. So into 2018, that's when B Recruitment was formed, born. Obviously, from then, from running your own business, you turn over again, 2.1 million the first year. I mean, how is that achieved? That's quite a feat for a new business. How do you go about, how do you set that up without, obviously, the playbook to recruitments? This is how you do it. Now, how do you implement that in the first year of trade for a new business?
Blood, sweat and
tears. Is that what it is?
Blood, sweat and tears, yeah. I mean, my own personal journey was a bit of a... It all sort of like came into... it all sort of came into like that funnel for me at the same time. I mean, so I was at the back end of my time with this small business. I was very much in the position where I watched these guys enjoy the fruits of my labour, so to speak, to put it kindly, which is fine. You know, it's their right to do so. I then watched them, learnt from the some good business decisions, some bad business decisions I personally thought that they'd made. And it got to sort of probably about 2017-ish. And I was like, I've got to do this. I've got to do it for myself.
Now or never.
Yeah, absolutely. And I felt like I'd got the grounding from the best connection. You know, they'd given me the handbook to say this is how to be an industrial and a driving recruiter. These guys at the smaller business had sort of shown me the good, bad and indifferent of about how the back office part of it worked and the risks associated and the HMRCs and the factoring companies and the relationships you have to build, the people don't see, suppliers, all the important stuff that people don't, it's just part of their daily
invoices.
It's hard. So I'd seen that. I'd seen it with my open eyes and I'd observed it and I wasn't necessarily doing it, but I thought, I can learn that. And I was sort of, I suppose, subconsciously making notes. 2018, yeah. So I just going through a separation with my wife at the time, all ended on good terms and everything. We had a cracking relationship for many, many years and to come to a bit of a natural end. And it just so happened, early mid-July 2018, I'd got the ball rolling on B Recruitment. We hadn't started billing anybody yet, but I'd done all the setting the bank accounts up, creating relationships with factoring companies, got a payroll company, you know, all that good stuff. We were ready to go. We'd got our clients that we was sort of ready, like, you know, that were ready to give us an opportunity. We'd got an office. We've got laptops, we've got mobile phones, we're literally ready to press the button. And my relationship broke down and it was literally like, you know, this is it now. So very, very challenging time, very, like the hardest probably time in my entire life. But what it did give me something to do was give me an absolute focus on, right, I'm a single guy, yeah. I'm moving back in with my mum and dad, 36 years old, back into the same bedroom I grew up at when I was like 12. Literally back into there. What time will you be home, son? Your tea's going to be on the table. You know, all them questions, which was hard to go back to as a 36-year-old guy, you know what I mean? Lived independently for 15 years, if not more.
It's huge.
So what do you do? You go in and you think to yourself, well, mum and dad are great and they're there to support me, but I'm going to give everything to this. I didn't need to be at home sitting watching Coronation Street with my mum and dad at night. You know what I mean? I was like, right, I'm going to give people at home now that haven't got as much skill as I've got and knowledge. And I'm working till 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night in the office, getting drivers out. It was drivers to start with. So sort of going back on your question a little bit, we built it up to, we had like 50 drivers a day out after 6 weeks. We were absolutely killing it. To get 50 drivers a day out now from a standing start is, and we didn't have like that two or three relationships, but it was just canvassing, get rates out, you know, early morning hit lists, getting drivers in, registering them on a Saturday, oh, you work until 6 o'clock tonight, are you? No problem, I'll stay in the office till 8, 9 o'clock, register a driver. And it was just infectious, and we built it. And my business partner was great at the time, Mike. He just took care of all the crap in my mind. And he just left me to do what I was good at. And I just literally, all I had to do was pick up the phone and do what I was good at. That was it. And I knew enough about the back part of it to advise him on the stuff that he didn't. He was new to it. So
I suppose at the time as well, with the relationship going down, it's nice to take your mind off what's going on that side and be like, okay, I need something to...
Oh, Kev, yes, honestly, it was the best thing that could have happened to me, because, you know, a lot of people our age have been through the same things. You know, you go through a breakup and somebody that's been, you know, your partner for 13 years, I was with Becky. It was a long time. And, yeah, it was tough. And they were good days. And that's why it gives me the focus on where we are now. And it's still so, so important to me, because built it from nothing. You know, I remember, and I had nothing as well. That was the big thing. We were doing 50 drives a day, which was doing us an incredible... Honestly, you look at the bank account.
Having to balance the finances and all that.
I had nothing. And I was paying myself. I'd gone from earning probably 60K a year, 2017, that's 7 years ago. Good job, you know. Okay, fair enough. A lifestyle to that level as well, but still had plenty of disposable income. And I'd gone from that, moving back with mum and dad, to I was prepared to take no wages, but me and Mike got some money together. About 10 grand, I think, we got together. But we said, right, we'll pay ourselves a grand a month for 3 months, which give us 6 grand in outgoings. And then we had 4 grand, basically, to start the business.
Why?
4 grand. We got it to, after 6 weeks, we were probably doing eight grand a week in revenue. But I was like, I'm not touching it, I'm not going anywhere near it.
Thank you.
I'm here to build a business.
So following on then, so 2018, obviously this is the birth, the inception. 2019, into the dreaded C word, 2019 and COVID. Obviously, talk us through the experiences you and the business had kind of navigating those years.
So we moved into a new premises, actually. So obviously COVID came in March 2020, didn't it? So we went back in, but 2019 was still all relevant, really, because we just, the December, we'd moved into an office in Tamworth, which was still in, one of our three branches. So we'd made quite a big commitment there, because you go from, as I say, an office probably two or three times this size executive box then. So we'd move within the same transport business to an office across the hall, which was maybe 6 or 8 berth. Not me, I've got to say. Mike's got to take the credit for this. He sort of pushed me, was like, look, I've seen an office, it's great. Gets us into the town centre. We'll badge it all up, be recruitment, give it a lick of paint. It looks great. And it's been great for us. But that was December 2019. So we moved it overnight. All the staff at this point, we'd got sort of 7 or 8 of us. I was a bit like a glorified branch manager at this point. So I was pulling the strings, going and seeing the customers still. That was the office, the sort of the MD role didn't kick in till after COVID, in all fairness. So I was just an owner director at this point. Still hitting the ground running. As I say, you're bringing your staff in at this point, your margin's still in and around where it is. It doesn't always go the way you envisage it at the start, which is, well, the more staff we bring in, the more margin we're going to make, the more security we can build around the business, the more investments that we can put back into the business, the better we can become. It doesn't always work like that. You know, mistakes that you make, the learning curves that you go, bad hires, et cetera, et cetera. But we were still doing really well. We're still doing really, really well. I think I went to I went to America, actually. I went to watch the Fury versus Wilder one, the second fight, yeah. The one where he beat him,
yeah,
in Vegas. and it was all circulating, and it was like people wearing masks. This was the February, people wearing masks, and it was all like, but people were still living a normal lifestyle. Then it got a bit progressively worse through March, didn't it? And then it was like, right, okay, there's several cases in the UK now, and people are bringing it back on planes from various different destinations. And then I think, I might be wrong, it was the last Friday in March, I want to say the 28th, I don't know, but I had three customers ringing me on the same day. All of them had 20 plus temps in. It was like, two of them said, Shu, can you come and talk to your temps today, please? And I was like, yeah, of course I can, what's happened? And, you know, we're shutting the factory, we're shutting the warehouse, we're going home with this, that and the other. You know, this was like probably, these customers were probably at the time 40, 50% of our business. So, and they were solid sort of all year round users, great clients, great margins, great relationships. You know, there was no reason for them to be going anywhere else. It was almost like an apology. I was like, yeah, of course, you know, I'll come down. I was over there straight away at these clients, did two in one day. And I remember in one of the clients, production manager stood on his soapbox, literally stood on like an upside down milk crate. It was like, right, guys, you know, as you know, COVID's arrived. It's here. We advise you all to get home and stay home. And then obviously at that point, then you get home and you see Boris and you see all the stuff that's going on. So shut it down on the Friday. Within a week, we'd gone from probably having a good solid branch of 110, 120 temps out to, I think we had about four temps out the following week. So to put that into context, right, there was seven, eight employees and like four drivers out, and they were sort of like delivering food, I think. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something related to they still needed to keep the wheels turning. And if you remember rightly, furlough didn't probably kick in for another two or three weeks after that, and we were like scratching our head a lot, like every company in the UK. You know, you probably went through a week or two before Boris introduced furlough, which was a lifesaver for a lot of companies, and fair play to the government for that. You know, I will give them that. That was brilliant for the UK.
Yeah.
And saved a lot of businesses, and there was bounce back loans, and there was all sorts of grants available. So we took everything available, like you do. But I just went, it was back to 2018. Again, it was like 2 years on from when we'd started, but it was back to 2018. We had there was people not working for me, but I know people who had other contracts, like at places like Hermes and that, you know, because it was classic, weren't it? There was another one, weren't it?
Yeah.
I've got nothing to do. I've got a few quid in my pocket. I'm just going to search on the apps. Load of gym gear, weren't it? It was load of gym gear. It was a spring, lovely. If you remember, the weather was great, so people were buying stuff, rattan furniture and this, that, and the other. Now I didn't have any contracts that were doing that, but I remember some of my competitors who were working with like the likes of DPD, Hermes, Tufnells when they were in existence. And there was doctors unloading trailers.
Yeah.
There was physiotherapists unloading trailers. There was lawyers, you know, picking. It was crazy time. Right. So the quality of staff, you put an advert out, and I very rarely had to deal with what we call a D&G, did not go. I very rarely had to deal with people that weren't going to work. People wanted to go to work because as soon as they got out, as soon as they were done, they had to go home.
Yeah.
It was like, what you working with to get out of the house was like, I'm going to go food shopping. I need to queue up for half an hour to get into Sainsbury's, but that's my day out today.
Awesome. Yeah.
1 hour exercise. If you remember, it was like, when you look back at it now.
The stories about police nicking people for going out.
Yeah, people being tracked. And then from a personal point of view, I'd got myself into pretty good shape over COVID, so I'd just used the time to just put into myself a little bit. I'd move back,
time just watching you taking shots on Tamworth.
Oh yeah, exactly, yeah, like, yeah. So I met my mate Scott, who we're really good pals. I'm really good pals with now, and we still train to this day. I'm not quite as in good shape as I was back then. But, God, yeah, I got my body fat down to, like, 9%. Mm. I hadn't been 9% since I was about 15, I don't think. So I'd worked really hard on myself in that time. So when I look back on that period of time, in hindsight now, I think to myself, you know what, it was stressful, but I really enjoyed it. 11th of April, I think, they opened the pubs outdoors. People were wearing blankets. Well, it was this time of year, weren't it? People wearing blankets, and you had to wear a mask, and you had to book your table for 2 hours. And do you remember all that?
Yeah.
And you had that for probably another couple of months, and then they started loosening it a bit more and stuff like that, didn't it? Mm-hmm. Eventually, sort of got into the mid-2021s, and that's literally when, and I'm sure a lot of recruiters will remember these times, it went crazy for about a year or two, probably 18 months, to be fair. Absolutely. And that's when we went on to do some like crazy numbers, really.
Yeah, because that would have been off the back of, they called it the Great Resignation, didn't they?
Yes.
Off the back of COVID, where everyone's spent time with the family, been at home, like I said, been a bit more introverted, reassessed their lives, and then just decided that the jobs that were required for them, I don't want to work in the city anymore, I don't want to do trial hours a day, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that.
That was the same with the hospitality industry, wasn't it? That once people came out of that hospitality industry then, and the office jobs come in, it's 9 till 5, and you didn't have to do all your weekends, you didn't have to do 60-hour days, the hospitality business suffered then.
You were very fortunate that you were able to revolve your staff, your temp staff, into other positions. A lot of these places, the hospitality, the pubs, the clubs, whatever, they just let the kids go, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
They just literally laid them off, and then, surprise, surprise, they're all now working for the delivery companies or whatever, earning good, very looked after. What a surprise, they don't want to come back. They don't want to be your waiter again then, because you just said goodbye, see you later, best of luck. And then all of a sudden there was a staffing crisis while they're in hospitality.
Yeah. And that filtered right the way through to, you know, like, I know you just give that reference there, but our customers went just mad. It was like places that would have 3 or 4 off you would be having like 12. Places that would be having 10 off you would have like 40. And you were like in this little purple patch. And as I say, that's where we went on to.
They're probably trying to get their day back, aren't they, then? They're like, come on, let's get all systems go. Let's.
But we went, and, you know, yes, we worked hard. And I know we've referenced it a couple of times, sort of like the harder you work, the luckier you get. But we were very fortunate to be around at that period of time, which has now set us up to be where we are today. But, you know, I think we did 2.1, 4.4, double, and then 7.1 or something daft like that. And then last year was 7.2, because we'd just come off that back of that like real purple patch. So we doubled, and then just a little bit of growth. And to be fair, we'll be a little bit back this year, but that's not a problem. All of my competitors and a lot of the people that I've known and worked with for many, many years are telling me the same. And, you know, it's fine. It's pre-COVID levels now is where we're at. But, I'm sure you're going to come on to it. But with reference to those numbers, we just went through that purple patch where you could not pick the phone up and speak to a company without them saying, can you come and see me? Can you get me half a dozen people?
You've got to be in a position to maximise your potential there. Mm-hmm. You've got to be in a position where you can say, yes, we can do this.
And
like you say, that's only hard work that gets you there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than saying, right, no, I'm sorry, we can't do this, can't do that. Because once the opportunity's gone, it's gone, isn't it? They go elsewhere and you might not ever speak to them again.
Yeah.
We might be sometime that business goes elsewhere. So you've still got to put the work in there, haven't you, to make that work?
Massively.
Recruitment as an industry contributes $41.3 billion to the UK economy in 2022. There are over 29,000 registered recruitment agencies in the UK. So obviously your numbers speak for themselves there. So what is it that you do so well, do you think, within what is a congested industry, to stand out and be able to do the numbers that you do?
I think, trying to deflect it from the hard work a little bit, because ultimately it's about that and your knowledge and your skills. So I will touch up on that. But again, I use football as an analogy. If you get a team that does the basics really, really well, finds feet, passes, got a team of fit players that can run around, you're halfway there. Okay, attitude then comes into it. Skill set obviously comes into it. You know, there are things that you do need to add to doing the basics really, really well. But I use a reference quite often. I need to be able to put a kid into that position and say, right, ring them companies on there, you know, and ask these three questions, please. You know, are all your staff in today? Do you need anything else? You know, who do you use for your agency? Just some real basic stuff. And you need to be able to just basically offer it to somebody with a real low skill set, with the right attitude, to say, look, cover those basic questions. And if you do it consistently enough, consistent, and you keep showing up for your clients, you've got an half-decent business. And I like to think that's how we've built our business.
I think it's confidence as well. I think you've always been quite a confident person. I think recruitment is, from our point of view, you've got to have a certain amount of confidence to be able to pick up the phone, speak to 30 strangers of the day, and be scared to be told to be told, listen, I've had to take cold calls. The negatives that come up that you've got to overcome, which for us, when we're learning the trade, that for negatives in recruitment, it also can work in life, but you've got to have that confidence at first to be able to say, okay, pick up the phone. I think that's what sets you apart from me personally, that you're a confident guy, and we've seen at the business club the other week, you can get up and speak in front of 100 people and you're sure of yourself. And
yeah, listen, I don't think it's... I think you've got a real fair point there, Kev, but when I'm having a tough day, and we all have tough days, by the way, and bear in mind, I don't do a lot of sales now. I go and position myself where there's a decent meeting or there's an opportunity, and I have to try and use my time, because it's expensive for the business, I'm going to jump on that one. But in my daily job, if I was on the phone making calls a day, an old boss of mine and a great boss, and he might see this actually if it goes onto LinkedIn, he said to me years ago, he says, what's the worst thing that can happen to you on a day? And I'm not going to swear, but he says you can get told to off, yep. Right? What's the worst thing that can happen to a firefighter? Easy, isn't it? You can get killed in a fire. That's a bad day for a firefighter. That's a bad day for a policeman, is he could get stabbed or shot. You know, I'm going to go and sit in a warm office with a cup of coffee, and I might get told to bugger off a few times, but that's about as bad as it gets.
Yeah. When I was an apprentice, one of the old heads, his saying was, in regards to what's the worst thing that happens, and it was, welcome today, no one died, no one got pregnant.
Yeah, there you go.
Strange, sort of slanty, but yeah, same kind of ethos, isn't it? Like I say, your worst day is nothing in comparison to in the real world what could be at that time.
Not getting no lead, not getting no decent leads. Okay.
It's still difficult, because where you have to like really check your ego now, for me personally, is that you know, now you go back 20 years ago, you were talking to guys of our age in their early 40s, maybe a little bit older, production managers, warehouse managers, you know, people who were earning decent money, have a decent skill set, that got loads of experience behind them, and you were ringing people up and you're always like, you know, I've got this cheeky little runt on the phone who's asking me if I can book temps, and I've been using such and such for years. Where I am now with it is, now I'm talking in my 40s now, I'm talking to people either who I've got relationships with, already know, people my age, I've got plenty of in common with them. So it's a little bit easy from that side.
Yeah.
Where I struggle now, if I do go into the sales environment with a team, is that when I'm talking to people in their early to mid-20s that are making decisions for businesses, that you haven't got an awful lot in common with. Mm-hmm. You know, you're Gen Zs of this world. I didn't realise the other day until the other day, I'm actually generation... I'm a millennial. Born in 82, so I'm a millennial. But when you're talking to people born, I think it was post 95, Gen Z or something like that, it can be quite difficult, because they want to speak to somebody their own age who's got plenty in common with them. You know, they're doing the things that the youngsters do these days. So you've got to try and keep yourself current. You've got to try and keep yourself relevant. You've got to know a little bit about a lot, but not loads, to still be effective. In my mind.
So recruitment in and of itself, I'm intrigued hugely by the industry, being in construction, using recruiters. I've got experiences, good and bad. So I just wanted to know, for you, for as long as you've been in recruitment, I mean, you've been 20 years, you'll have seen everything to see, I would think. How do you navigate the aura of recruitment with staff, as in ethics, the culture of your business,
preconceptions?
So there's no governance as such as that of recruitment. It's had a reputation in the past of being a little bit Wild West in regards to people go here, there, take clients, take contracts. For a business to be as successful as yours has been, and for retention of staff and clients, what do you do consciously to ensure that your staff and business as a whole is seen as an ethical recruiter?
Well, we're a member of the REC, so we are sort of governed by those guys. We've got gangmasters licenses, and we're part of the ALP and all sorts of different stuff. So we try to credit ourselves as we best possibly can there, with accreditations and stuff. They're all on our email signatures and all that sort of stuff. But most of the recruiters out there are governed by the REC. And you do have to jump through some hoops for them to keep your badge, so to speak. I think really it's difficult, you're right, because the preconception of recruiters by the general public, your clients, people on your LinkedIn, your mates, it's tough, because they all see you as, well, it's a great industry to be in terms of like the rewards that you get financially and stuff like that. And yeah, it can be, if you're half decent, it can be. But it's bloody hard work. It is hard, hard work. And the stresses that you go through in this industry, I would generally, taking out being a doctor and all the emergency services and stuff like that, absolutely. But, and I'm sure it's the same in construction. I'm sure it's the same in media and hospitality and stuff like that. But, you know, a bad day in recruitment's a real bad day, a real bad day. And you know, because of the financials involved and blah, 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 it can be really, really challenging. The good days are really good. The bad days are really bad. And I think the preconception from your clients and the outer world is that, well, you're in recruitment. So you're in sales, you're in recruitment. So it must be great financially and stuff like that. And I think it gets a bit of a bad press, if I'm honest. I think it gets a bit of a bad press. And I think there's a lot of people who do sit behind their company and really do, and I like to think we're the same, genuinely, and we try to do things correctly, and you've got your moral compass in the right direction, and you're just guided by that, really.
I think it's changed. The conception of it, because back in the day, I think, and then the same with estate agents and with people like that,
anything sales related,
I feel that it's changed over the last 20 years. It's a bit more legitimate now.
No.
Not legitimate. That's probably not.
No, but have you? So how long have the accreditation has been in place, the code of conduct, sir?
Well, they've been around forever, the code of conduct. I mean, companies like ourselves, when we first started, you have to earn enough money to pay for the licenses, so to speak. But I think it's changed in terms of, like, back in the old days, and I am going back 20 years here, but you used to photocopy Kev's passport and he'd be on his way to work, didn't he? Now, the checks that we have to put in place, and this is one of the things that, for me, that makes me not fall out of love with the industry, but it really is a struggle for me, because I just want to talk to people. I want to get on the phone. I want to talk to people. I want to make you happy. Impossible to make everybody happy, but I want to get the temps working. I want my staff to be smiling. The amount of red tape now involved, yeah. and what COVID has done with us, it's just put what has been an advantage for COVID is put your apps, your license checks online, your passport, your proof of address, and you know your mother's maiden name, and all this sort of stuff. It's brought all this sort of stuff in, so it has formalised it, Kev, and it has sort of brought it up to modern day standards and stuff like that, but I still do think it gets a bad press from people, because if you're not into it and you don't know the intricacies of it and the stresses involved and all that sort of stuff, it's easy to see that, well, actually, it's just reasonably, and I class myself as this, people coming from a, you know, not a university background, that are absolutely smashing it, doing really, really well, you know, and then you've got people, you know, William, who went and got his, you know, his university degree, and he's on a middle management job, and you've got somebody like me who's just a bit of a lad at school and blah, 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 and you know, I've gone on to do what I've done with the recruitment, and people like don't like that. People don't like that. And your everyday guy, I mean, there are a lot of people that are like, fair play, and they do that to me. They're like, you know, wow. But and bear in mind, we haven't, in my opinion, being quite humble, we haven't really done anything special. I've just gone out there and got a few temps out and built a bit of a business and dealt with the issues along the way. But people don't like it in recruitment because of the rewards. And I think they look at it and think, you know, and it does get a bit of a bad press for that, for me, recruitment. People, we're relying on people to go into work, and we can only do so much. Even if that box was ticked and that one and that one and that one, they could still have a bad day and just not go to work the next day. And all that work that you've done with that customer for months and months and months and months and months leading up to, go on, I'll give you an opportunity. Bang, it's gone in an instant because Johnny hasn't gone to work, and it's like, don't call me again type thing. So it is difficult, and it's not always your fault, and that's why you have them moments where you're like, I've got to try and recover this now, and you want to tear your hair out.
Thanks, Jim, for your time. It's been enlightening and insightful to find out a little bit more about recruitment and yourself. So, yeah, very much appreciated.
I've broke my virginity, my podcast virginity. Thank you.